Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Yeah.
So today we're tackling a topic a lot of you have been asking about, the potential downsides of statins.
It's certainly a hot topic. Lots to unpack here.
Yeah, for sure. And you specifically asked us to dive into Chapter 8 of the book, The Cholesterol Myth.
Ah, good pick.
Yeah, this chapter goes deep into statins' side effects and really digs into whether research might be downplaying how big of a deal those effects are. Now, full disclosure, this book has 17 chapters.
Okay.
And we're only focusing on one today, so we're getting a very targeted look here. Also, something I found interesting, it was originally written in Dutch, but, you know, this whole statin thing, it's a worldwide conversation.
Absolutely. Statins and their side effects, it's a global debate for sure. And this chapter, it really jumps right into the thick of it, starting with some pretty conflicting statistics about side effects.
Yeah, that part really got me thinking. It's like, who do you believe? Are statins basically safe? Or is there this whole hidden wave of side effects we're not being told about?
It's a pretty stark contrast when you see the numbers side by side. You've got, on one side, Sir Rory Collins. He's a big name in statin research, claiming that serious side effects are, like, super rare.
Yeah.
Affecting maybe 1 in 20,000 people. But then you have, on the other side, a British cardiologist, Asim Malhotra,
yeah,
saying almost half of his patients have dealt with serious side effects.
Whoa, that's a huge gap between those two.
Yeah, a massive difference. And then, just to complicate things even further, you have the American Heart Association chiming in, saying that 20% to 40% of people on statins end up stopping within a year because of side effects.
Okay, so someone's not being straight with us.
Right, something's not adding up. And that's where the work of researcher Beatrice Galam becomes really crucial.
Yeah.
She makes the point that if research is downplaying the possibility of these side effects, it could be putting patients in real danger.
Because they're not getting the full picture.
Exactly. How can anyone make a truly informed choice about their health if they're not being given all the facts?
So let's talk specifics. We keep saying side effects, but what does that actually mean? What kind of problems are we talking about?
Well, there was this 2014 study published in the journal PLS.
Okay.
And they reviewed, get this, 50 other studies.
Yeah.
And found a whole spectrum of reported issues. And we're not talking just minor annoyances here either. Some of these side effects can have a huge impact on how you live your life.
So, like, what kind of things were people reporting?
Things like muscle pain, weakness, fatigue, even problems with thinking straight, like memory loss or just feeling confused. Imagine trying to go about your day, but you're constantly dealing with aching muscles or feeling completely wiped out.
Oh, yeah.
Or your brain just isn't as sharp as it used to be. That can change everything about your life.
That's scary. And then to make it even more real, the chapter highlights a couple of personal stories.
Right.
People whose lives were seriously affected by these side effects.
Yeah, they bring it all home. The book talks about a pilot named Tony Royal and a former politician, Jan Marinissen, both of whom had really debilitating side effects from statins. It really hits you when you hear about how these side effects can completely upend someone's life. It's not just a list of possibilities. It's real people, real struggles.
Yeah, that's a good point. And of all the side effects, the one that really jumped out at me was fatigue.
Right.
The book mentions a study from 2012 that looked directly at the connection between statins and how much energy people have.
Yeah. Beatrice Galam, remember her from earlier? She led that study.
Yeah.
And they found that statins led to decreased energy in a huge chunk of the participants, 40% of the men and 50% of the women. And, you know, that link between energy levels and exercise, it's a big deal. If you're always feeling exhausted, you're less likely to get up and move. And that can have a huge knock-on effect on your overall health, especially heart health.
Kind of ironic, right?
Mm.
The medication that's supposed to be helping your heart might actually be making you less likely to take care of it in other ways.
Right. What's even more surprising is that someone like Peter Getcha, he's a researcher who knows statins inside and out. Even he was surprised that these findings about fatigue weren't being talked about more in the medical world.
Yeah, that's strange. Makes you wonder why it's not getting more attention.
Definitely raises some red flags.
Okay, so let's shift gears to another potential problem. The connection between statins and diabetes. This whole area seems super murky.
Oh, it's a complicated one for sure. It's accepted that statins can increase the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. In fact, it's actually required to be listed as a possible side effect on statin labels here in the US.
So it's not a secret?
No, not at all. But the big question is, by how much does it increase the risk? That's where the debate gets heated.
So what does the research say? What are the actual numbers we're looking at?
Well, in 2010, A study in the journal Diabetologia found that after just 6 years, there was a significant uptick in type 2 diabetes among statin users. And then another study, published a year later, showed that if you were on statins for more than 2 years, your chances of developing diabetes tripled.
Tripled. That's pretty alarming.
Yeah, hard to ignore numbers like that. And the book gets into some of the reasons why statins might actually be contributing to diabetes. It talks about how they might be messing with insulin production and sensitivity, both super important for controlling blood sugar.
Okay.
And then there's the impact on coenzyme Q10, or CoQ10 for short. You know how it's crucial for our cells to produce energy. Well, some research suggests statins might deplete these levels, which could be another factor in developing diabetes.
I see. So it's like a domino effect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just to bring it back to real-world impact, the book tells the story of Jan Marinesen, the politician we mentioned earlier.
Right.
Well, after being prescribed Crestor, a type of statin, he ended up developing type 2 diabetes.
Man, it's a stark reminder that these risks aren't just theoretical. They're actually impacting people's lives.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's dive into another area where the evidence gets really confusing. Statins and cancer. There seems to be research pointing in both directions, which is super confusing for anyone trying to understand the real risks.
Yeah, it's a complicated one. On the one hand, you've got studies like this 2013 research from Japan.
Okay.
They found a link between low cholesterol and a higher risk of cancer, especially in older folks. And the study suggested that statins, because they lower cholesterol, could actually play a role in this increased risk, maybe by depleting cellular energy and messing with the activity of natural killer cells, which are super important for our immune system.
So in that case, lowering your cholesterol could actually be bad for you.
Well, that's what this research is suggesting. But then, to make things even more confusing, you have big name researchers like Rory Collins arguing that statins are actually good for you when it comes to cancer.
Wait, so now we have two totally opposite viewpoints. Yeah. How do we make sense of that?
Yeah, right. It's a head scratcher. And there's a group of 16 scientists who came out swinging, directly challenging Collins' claims.
Oh, well.
They found that people on statins actually had a much higher rate of cancer. So clearly this whole statins and cancer thing needs a lot more research to figure out what's really going on.
Agreed. So much conflicting information. Now, the book also specifically mentions a possible link between statins and breast cancer. Why is that a particular concern?
Yeah, they highlight the study from 2003 called the 4S study, which found that women on statins were more likely to develop breast cancer. And then, fast forward to 2014, you have a review published in BMC Medicine.
Okay.
And they actually recommend that women at high risk for breast cancer avoid statins entirely because of the potential negative effects on insulin resistance, cholesterol levels, and the balance of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids in the body, all things that can play a role in breast cancer.
Okay, so lots of things to think about for women especially.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a conversation to have with your doctor.
Okay, another thing that kind of freaked me out is the impact statins can have on our brains, like our cognitive function. The book talks about this guy, Dr. Dwayne Gravelein, a physician who was almost a NASA astronaut.
Yeah, his story is pretty wild.
Yeah, after starting on Lipitor, he had this really sudden and serious memory loss and cognitive impairment, which would be a nightmare for anyone, but especially for a doctor. And he came up with this theory he calls statin roulette.
Okay.
His idea is that statins can block not just cholesterol production, but also the production of coenzyme Q10 and dolichol. And these things are essential for keeping our brains healthy and for cells to communicate properly.
Right. So it's not just impacting your heart. It's potentially messing with your brain, too. And a 2015 article in the Expert Review of Clinical Pharmacology cited some research by our friend Beatrice Galam again.
Okay.
And she found that 40% of patients who are having memory issues actually saw those problems get better after they start taking statins.
This would be a direct connection.
Yeah. Pretty compelling evidence.
Okay. So with all this talk about potential risks, it really makes you question whether statins are actually worth it, especially for people who are taking them for primary prevention, you know, trying to prevent heart disease before they even have it.
Absolutely. That's the million-dollar question, right? And the book really dives into that debate. There's this 2015 article from JAMA Internal Medicine by a cardiologist named Rita Redberg.
Okay, I think I've heard of her.
She basically argues that the evidence for statins being effective for primary prevention is actually pretty weak.
Really?
Yeah, she goes so far as to say there's no proof that they actually make people live longer or improve their quality of life in this context.
That's huge, especially when you consider how many people are prescribed statins for exactly that reason.
Yeah, it makes you think. And then there's another guy, John Abramson, who brings up a really important point. He's concerned about the fact that so much of the research backing up statin recommendations is funded by the pharmaceutical industry, you know, the companies that make and sell statins.
Ah, so there's a potential conflict of interest there.
Exactly. It's hard to be sure that the research is totally unbiased when the people funding it stand to make a lot of money if the results are positive.
That's a really good point.
And he points out that these industry-funded studies often downplay the health risks, which obviously creates a misleading picture of how safe statins really are.
So we might not be getting the full story.
Right. And to make things even more complicated, both the UK and the US have actually lowered their thresholds for prescribing statins.
What does that mean?
It means a lot more people are now considered candidates for statins.
Even though there are all these questions about side effects and potential risks?
Yeah, even with all the concerns, they've expanded the pool of people who are considered eligible. And this happened despite some serious worries about conflicts of interest among the committees who make these recommendations. It makes you wonder if it's really about patient well-being or just expanding the market for these drugs?
It's a disturbing thought. And then there's this other study from 2016 that I found really fascinating. It was done in Japan, and they looked at independent statin research conducted after the EU implemented stricter regulations for research independence in 2005.
Ah, so research that was less likely to be influenced by the drug companies?
Exactly. And here's the crazy part. They found that after 2005, the research consistently showed no benefit in preventing cardiovascular disease from statins.
Wow, that's a huge difference from the pre-2005 research, which generally painted a pretty positive picture of statins.
Right. And it makes you wonder if that shift in findings is directly related to the decrease in industry influence.
It definitely suggests that.
And the guy who led that study, Professor Harumi Okuyama, he goes so far as to say there's no evidence to recommend statins to anyone. He even says that people who are already taking them should stop.
Wow.
That's a pretty radical statement. It really makes you question everything we thought we knew about statins.
It definitely shakes things up. It challenges the whole foundation on which we've built our understanding of these drugs.
So it feels like we're at a crossroads here. If the evidence for statins is so shaky, where do we go from here? What are the alternatives? How do we make smart decisions about our heart health with all this conflicting information?
Such good questions. And that's actually a perfect segue into the next part of our deep dive, where we'll explore some of the alternative approaches to heart health and talk about how you can have a more informed conversation with your doctor about your own personal needs and concerns.
I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. Welcome back to our deep dive into Chapter 8 of the Cholesterol Myth.
We've covered a lot of ground already, all this stuff about side effects, potential long-term risks. Pretty heavy.
Yeah, and this chapter really takes aim at some of the big names in statin research. Doesn't hold back at all.
Like Rory Collins and that whole CTT collaboration we were talking about earlier.
Exactly right. The author, that's Ufer Rapskov, he really goes after some of the practices that are like standard procedure in statin research, especially the way they weed out participants who have side effects during those run-in periods.
It feels almost deliberate, like they're trying to hide the problems.
Yeah, and that really raises questions about how reliable some of this research actually is, especially when it comes to primary prevention, you know, where they're always saying the benefits outweigh the risks.
Right, right. Speaking of primary prevention, the chapter talks about this thing called the number needed to treat, or NNT.
Yeah.
Can you break that down for us? Why is that important in this whole conversation?
Sure. NNT is basically a way to measure how effective a treatment is. It looks at how many people need to be treated with that specific treatment to prevent just one negative outcome. So let's say the NNT for statins to prevent a heart attack is like 100.
Okay.
That means 100 people would need to take statins for a certain amount of time for just one person to actually avoid a heart attack. Just one.
So the smaller the NNT, the better, right?
Yeah. Exactly. A lower NNT means the treatment is more effective because fewer people need to take it to see a benefit. But when it comes to statins for primary prevention, the NNT is actually pretty high. Like sometimes it's 100 or even more.
So a lot of people taking statins might not actually see any benefit at all.
Potentially, yeah. And when you think about all the possible side effects and long-term risks we've been discussing, it makes you wonder if the risks are worth it for a lot of people, especially those who aren't at high risk for heart disease in the first place.
It seems like instead of this one-size-fits-all approach, there needs to be a more personalized way of figuring out treatment.
Absolutely, yeah. This chapter is all about moving away from that blanket recommendation mentality.
One thing I found interesting was the talk about the financial burden of statin use. Seems like we don't talk about that enough.
Yeah, for sure. It often gets overlooked. But the chapter brings up this point from Dr. Malhotra. He says that while the statins themselves might be cheap, the cost of managing the side effects, treating the complications that can come up, that can add up really quickly.
So it's not just the cost of the pills, it's all the downstream costs too.
Exactly. And those costs are often picked up by the healthcare system and ultimately taxpayers. So it becomes a bigger societal issue, not just a personal one.
Okay, shifting gears a bit, the chapter also talks about statins and aging, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that part caught my attention too. There's this 2015 study that suggests statins could actually speed up the aging process.
Wait, really? But aren't they supposed to help prevent age-related diseases like heart disease?
It seems counterintuitive, right? But the study found that statins can have a negative impact on stem cells. And stem cells are crucial for repair and regeneration throughout the body. They're like our body's own little repair crew, constantly working to replace damaged or old cells.
So if statins are messing with stem cell function, could that mean they're actually making our bodies age faster?
That's the theory, and it definitely needs more research. But it does make you question some of the assumptions we have about statins and their long-term effects.
Yeah, we still have a lot to learn.
Definitely. Mm. There are still so many unknowns, and I think one of the big takeaways from this chapter is that we need to be really careful about assuming statins are a quick fix. We need to be aware of the possible downsides.
Yeah, proceed with caution.
Exactly. And to drive that point home, the chapter has a bunch of case studies and personal stories from people who had bad experiences with statins. Hearing these stories really puts a human face on all the statistics and research. It reminds us that these risks aren't just theoretical, they're impacting real people.
Those personal stories are always so powerful. It's easy to get lost in the numbers, but when you hear someone's actual experience, it really hits home.
For sure. They highlight the human cost, which often gets lost in all the sciencey stuff. Like, remember Tony Royal, the pilot we talked about before? He had extreme fatigue, muscle pain, even problems thinking clearly after starting statins. His story shows how these side effects can just completely derail someone's life.
Yeah, it's scary. And then there's Jan Marinesen, the politician.
Right. He ended up developing type 2 diabetes after taking Crestor. It just shows how serious those metabolic effects can be.
And the book brings up Dr. Duane Graveland again, too, the astronaut who had that awful memory loss from Lipitor.
Yeah, his story is a reminder that statins can have a serious impact on the brain.
And there's this British radio presenter, Eamon Holmes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
He was on statins for 5 years for primary prevention, and he just felt terrible, tired, forgetful, just generally unwell.
Yeah.
And he didn't start feeling better until he stopped taking them.
It makes you wonder how many people are out there feeling like that, but not connecting it to the statins.
Right. It's a real wake-up call.
For sure. And it shows how important it is for doctors to really listen to their patients and take their experiences seriously, not just brush them off as anecdotal or nothing to worry about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, the chapter also talks about statin tolerance, which is basically when people have such bad side effects that they can't even handle low doses. Why is that such a controversial idea, and why is it important to talk about?
Well, some doctors and researchers have said that statin intolerance is a myth, or all in people's heads, that it's not a real physical reaction. But this chapter and more research is saying that statin intolerance is a real thing and needs to be taken seriously.
So it's not just people being dramatic.
Exactly. And part of the problem is that we focus so much on muscle pain as the main side effect.
Okay.
But it's not the only one. And that narrow focus might be causing us to miss other, maybe even more serious side effects that people are experiencing.
It's like we're only seeing a tiny part of the problem.
Right. And this chapter wants us to look at the whole picture, to consider all the possible effects statins might have, good and bad.
Earlier, we touched on how statin research might be biased. This chapter digs deeper into that, specifically focusing on research done after 2005, when the EU cracked down on industry influence.
Oh, yeah, when they implemented those stricter regulations for research independence.
Right. What did the author find when he looked at the research in that period?
Things get pretty interesting here. Professor Harumi Okuyama, he's the one who did this analysis, he found that studies done after 2005, when the drug companies had less influence, consistently showed no benefit in preventing cardiovascular disease from statins.
Wow, so once the research was more independent, statins didn't seem to be doing much good.
That's what the data suggests, yeah. And Okuyama doesn't mince words. He concludes that there's no evidence to recommend statins to anyone. He even says patients who are currently taking them should stop.
That's a strong statement.
Yeah.
Really makes you question everything we thought we knew.
Definitely shakes things up.
And he's not just questioning the older research. He also critiques this big study from 2017 that was published in The Lancet. It claimed statins were good for people over 75.
Right. I remember that one. Got a lot of attention.
Yeah. But the author of the book criticizes the way they did the study. Says it was based on flawed analysis and the data doesn't actually back up their claims.
So he's not just picking on old research, he's questioning new research too.
Yeah, it seems like the debate is far from over.
For sure. And even with more research, it's becoming clearer that the story of statins is much more complicated than we initially thought.
Absolutely. So with all this back and forth, what's the bottom line? What should people do? The chapter ends with a call for a complete reevaluation of statin research. What does that actually look like?
Well, it means taking a hard look at all the research that's already out there, questioning the assumptions, demanding more transparency from the researchers and the drug companies. It also means being open to other perspectives, considering different ways to approach heart health.
So not necessarily throwing out statins completely, but taking a more nuanced view.
Exactly. And that includes moving towards a more individualized approach where lifestyle changes and alternative therapies are considered just as important as medication. It's about creating a treatment plan that fits the person, not just relying on blanket recommendations.
Right. Treating the individual, not just the disease.
Exactly. And this chapter really emphasizes the importance of having open, honest conversations with your doctor. Talking about your own risk factors, the potential benefits and risks of statins, and exploring other options for managing your heart health. It's about making informed choices that feel right for you.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that's a good place to stop for now. We've covered so much in this chapter. It's clear that there's a lot to consider when it comes to statins and heart health.
Absolutely. It's not a simple issue.
We'll be back in the last part of our deep dive to dig into some of those alternative approaches to heart health and talk about how we can take a more holistic and personalized approach to taking care of our hearts.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Phew, after those last two segments going deep on statins, I gotta say, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in, for sure. Chapter 8 of The Cholesterol Myth, it really throws a wrench in a lot of the conventional thinking about statins and heart health.
No kidding. But you know what I appreciate? The chapter doesn't just leave us hanging with all these worries and questions.
Yeah.
It actually points us in a direction that feels, well, hopeful. Like there's a better way, a more holistic way to think about heart health, not just popping a pill and hoping for the best.
Right, exactly. Just focusing on lowering cholesterol with meds, it doesn't always get to the root of the problem, you know? Heart disease is usually caused by a whole bunch of different things working together.
Yeah, it's like trying to fix a leaky pipe with duct tape.
Yeah.
Might work for a little bit, but you got to deal with the actual problem eventually. So what are some of the alternatives? What can people do besides statins? What does this whole holistic approach to heart health actually look like?
Well, the chapter puts a lot of emphasis on lifestyle changes. That's the first line of defense.
Okay.
Things like eating a healthy diet, lots of fruits and veggies, whole grains, cutting back on processed food, sugary drinks, bad fats, all that stuff. Basically, giving your body the good stuff it needs to function properly.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like common sense. But I think it's easy to forget how much power our food choices really have over our health.
Oh, absolutely. And then, of course, there's exercise, another big one for heart health. Even just 30 minutes a day, most days of the week, can make a big difference. Doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Right. Doesn't have to be a marathon every day.
Nope. Even a brisk walk a few times a week, it all adds up.
Yeah.
It's all about finding something you enjoy and that you can actually stick with.
Makes sense. The chapter also mentions stress management, right? Seems like these days everyone's stressed out and that can't be good for the heart.
Oh, stress is a killer, literally. Chronic stress just wreaks havoc on your cardiovascular system. So finding healthy ways to manage it is crucial. Things like yoga, meditation, even just spending time in nature, whatever, helps you relax and unwind.
Yeah, those are all great. And let's not forget sleep. I know I'm guilty of not getting enough sometimes.
Sleep is so important, but it's the first thing to go when we're busy. And it's vital for, well, pretty much everything, including heart health. Getting 7 to 9 hours of good sleep every night, it can make a huge difference.
Okay, noted. More sleep. Now, the book briefly mentions the Mediterranean diet, which seems to be all the rage these days for its heart benefits. What's the deal with that? What makes it so special?
The Mediterranean diet is all about eating real whole foods, you know, fruits, veggies, legumes, whole grains, healthy fats like olive oil and nuts. It's about enjoying food, savoring those delicious flavors, and keeping things simple.
Yeah, it sounds more like a way of life than a diet, which I think is why people are drawn to it. It's not about deprivation. It's about enjoying good food.
Exactly. And it also limits things like processed foods, red meat, added sugar, all the stuff we know isn't good for our hearts.
So it's as much about what you don't eat as what you do.
Right. It's all about making choices that support your well-being.
Now, the book also mentions some alternative therapies that people might want to look into, like coenzyme Q10 supplements. Why is CoQ10, or it's CoQ10?
CoQ10, yeah, it's a mouthful.
It is. Why is it being looked at as something that might be helpful for heart health?
Well, CoQ10 is something our bodies make naturally. It plays a big role in helping our cells produce energy. And remember how we talked about statins possibly depleting CoQ10 levels?
Yeah.
Well, taking a CoQ10 supplement could help counteract some of those negative side effects.
So it's not a statin replacement, but something to talk to your doctor about.
Right.
Especially if you're having issues with statins.
Exactly. More research is definitely needed, but it's worth looking into. And I think that's a key takeaway from this whole chapter. We still have so much to learn about heart health. There are a lot of factors at play, and it's complicated.
So where do we go from here? What's the most important thing for people to remember, especially if they're feeling a bit lost or even scared after hearing all this stuff about statins?
The most important thing is to be informed. Don't be afraid to ask questions, to push back if something doesn't feel right, and to explore all your options.
Yeah, it's about being proactive and taking control of your own health.
Absolutely. Talk to your doctor, be honest about your concerns, and work together to find the best approach for you.
It's about finding what works for you as an individual, not just following the crowd.
Right. And this chapter really drives that point home. We have more power over our health than we often realize. We can make choices that support our well-being.
Well said. So there you have it, our deep dive into Chapter 8 of The Cholesterol Myth. We've talked about the potential downsides of statins, the controversy surrounding the research, and the importance of thinking about heart health in a more holistic and personalized way.
It's been quite a journey.
It has. We hope this has been helpful and empowering for everyone listening. Remember, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to our health. It's crucial to stay informed and to advocate for ourselves.
Absolutely. Keep learning, keep asking questions, and talk to your doctor about what's best for you.
And that's a wrap for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.